Hi, I'm Jean Duffy. I also want to express my gratitude to the people who have put this conference on, who I think the men that we've heard from and that we're going to hear from are the real heroes, because they are the ones that are in this, not because of any events particularly that happened in their lives that yanked them into this like it did Linda and me, but because of their awareness and their caring. And they are willing to sacrifice financial, personal, everything to expose what's going on in our country just because they care. And you men are the real heroes, and I really appreciate that. Thank you, Chris. I'm Jean Duffy, and I was the prosecutor in Saline County, assistant prosecutor in Saline County, that established a federally funded drug task force that got involved with Linda's case, which shut us down. I also, you know, like I said, I was yanked into this. I didn't go in it with any intentions of doing anything heroic. And I'm not a significant person. I'm not an important person. I'm not a hero. I just had a very significant experience. And, you know, I was perfectly content being an uninformed, mainstream media educated person. And I would still be, probably, if it hadn't have been for this experience. And the reason that I stay involved is because of Linda. She's had person after person, agent after agent, government official, police officers, Saline County deputies, state police officers that promise to do great things for her and then just go away and disappear. And I promised Linda that I would never go away, and I won't. And and I think the reason is, you know, I'm very fortunate. Nothing horrible has happened to me. I have a wonderful family. I have a wonderful husband. I have two brothers. I have parents. You know, my family is intact and healthy, and everything is absolutely wonderful. And I can't even begin. I would never say, Linda, I understand what I know how you feel, because I don't. And I've asked her to help me, you know, understand how awful it must be, because, you know, it's something that I needed to know. And then one day she told me something that finally I could relate to. She said, you know, Jean, when she lost her father, and she was very close to her father, and she said, it took me a year for the pain in my gut to go away after my father died. She said, after Kevin died, I just was hanging on until that year was up so that the pain would go away. And it's been 13 years now, and she said the pain is still there. She said, I just learned to. I've learned to live with it, and I've learned to laugh in spite of it. But that's what I can relate to. And Linda deserves better than that, as do other parents who have lost children because of the evils of our government. Okay, a little bit about how I got involved. I was an assistant prosecutor for Saline County, perfectly content at my job. It was a part-time job. I had children at home and going to school, and I liked being an attorney. I liked being a courtroom attorney. And I liked municipal court because it was like that old TV sitcom Night Court, except my situations were even funnier a lot of the time. And I worked hard, and I won the favor of the law enforcement agents in our district. Actually, it was a three-county district. I'm primarily prosecuted in one county, which was Saline County. But I also assisted in cases in the other districts. And when there was a tough, for example, DWI case, I would take that over and prosecute it. Now, although I was a prosecutor, I have to say that I am very, very liberal. But I saw the position of being deputy prosecutor the very best position to be in to assure people's constitutional rights. And I liked that. I would never have prosecuted someone that I didn't feel in my heart of hearts were guilty of what they were being prosecuted of. And because of that, I was also popular with some of the people that I prosecuted. I got thank you notes from prison, you know, thank you for treating me like a human being and maybe you saved my life. I prosecuted in Saline County in 1988, and then we were, our district got federal funding for a drug task force. I was not in the least bit interested in having any part of it. But the board of directors that were to hire the personnel for that task force took applications and were not satisfied with any of the applicants. So they came to me and asked me if I would take the job, and I said, no, thank you, I'm not interested. And they went back, couldn't find anyone that they were satisfied with, and after the third time, I said, well, I will take it through the first fiscal year. And that's all I intended to do. Well, I was hired as the administrator of the task force, and the board of directors also hired a fiscal officer. Now, hindsight means everything. At the time, we knew nothing, but the fiscal officer turned out to be a Dan Harmon plant in our task force, and we know that now. Certainly didn't know it at the time. I was allowed to hire my own undercover officers, and there were three full-time and four part-time officers. Well, we were up and running by March of 1990, and almost immediately when my officers hit the streets, they began connecting public officials to the drug trafficking in our county. And Dan Harmon's name was the one that consistently came up. Also, one of the judges there in our district by the name of John Cole. Well, John Cole was the criminal judge. And at that point, we knew we weren't going to be able to, that I was not going to be able to prosecute any of my cases in our district because they would go before John Cole. And the federal grand jury investigation that Linda talked about a little bit had been going on into the public official corruption in Saline County. So that was the logical place then for us to take our information about public officials. Bob Govar also was the person I talked to the most, and he was, of course, appreciative that we were strengthening his case against Dan Harmon, which he absolutely assured me would be indicted, along with Richard Garrett and some others. So for several months, we were gathering the information and taking the information to Bob Govar, who was presenting it to the grand jury. During this time, Dan Harmon became the prosecutor-elect. He had become a folk hero to all of Arkansas, literally, because of his work and dedication to solve the murders of Kevin and Don. And when he ran for prosecutor, he won very, very handily. So at that point, he became prosecutor-elect. And, of course, because of the plant that was in our task force, he knew that we were gathering information on him. And I have no doubt that he understood the significance of the information that we were gathering on him. He launched, through his media friends, a smear campaign against me. And I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about it, but it was massive. It was swift. There were 200 newspaper articles within a few months that was just, you know, a lie after lie. Things like I was spending our federal funds on automatic weapons. I didn't even buy a bullet. And, my officers weren't shoot 'em up guys. They were undercover officers. And that I was misspending federal funds, that I was making illegal arrests, that I was, there was even a report to the child welfare that I was abusing my children, which was probably the most hurtful thing that happened because I walked in one afternoon and my fifth grader was standing in the hallway with his fists clenched and tears in his eyes and said, I said, Curry, what is wrong with you? And he said, I'm going to get that Dan Harmon. I said, what happened? You know, I was just, my heart was pounding out of my chest. And he said that a lady took them out of class and asked them questions about the accusations that I had been beating them. And they wanted to look on their bodies for bruises. Well, the lady that, and then of course they had to interview me, and the lady that actually interviewed me said, Ms. Duffy, you know, I have to do this. She said, I understand what's going on. She said, after talking to your children, there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is any kind of case. But, and actually that talk with her became therapeutic, because I was aware then that the community was pretty much aware of what was going on. A side effect of what was happening because of all of this publicity were that the criminal element in the community that had very, very good information against other public officials now knew where to come with that information. You know, they were, what, how they explained it to me, that they were the street level people, and they were tired of getting the prison sentences and the, you know, being prosecuted, and the suits, as they call them, were walking free. But they didn't know where to go with the information, because all the suits they knew were dirty. Well, the effect of the media smear campaign that Dan Harmon launched against me was now they knew where to come. And there was a great windfall of a lot of really good information. So everyone had total confidence that the federal grand jury was going to indict a lot of the public officials in Saline County, and basically, you know, I was naive enough to think that this Saline County was going to be cleaned up. During this time, now, at this point, you know, our stories are overlapping here, because at this point, Linda Ives believed everything that she read in the media. I was not fighting back. I was not a public official or an elected official. I didn't have any reason to have to schmooze voters, because I basically, you know, knew I was doing the right thing, and I believed that in the end, when Dan Harmon was indicted, that then the truth would come out. So I wasn't fighting the bad publicity. I was just going along and doing my job. And like I said, Linda thought, believed everything that she read in the papers. Well, and my board of directors supported me until Dan Harmon was elected prosecutor. And then when Dan Harmon was elected prosecutor for the district, he told each member of the board if they wanted representation in court, that they had to get rid of me, or he would not prosecute any of their cases. And of course, he got by with that threat. And my task force, I was fired, and my task force was disbanded in November of 1990. However, I need to back up a little bit. The way we got involved with the murders of Kevin and Don, one of my undercover officers came to me and asked if we could open an investigation of Kevin and Don's murders. And I said, well, what on earth for? That case is 3 years old. And he said, well, for one thing, it's drug related, and for another thing, we can solve it. And so I said, you know, fine, yeah, go for it, obviously. And now, looking back, I realize that that's what shut us down. We were getting too close to solving the murders of Kevin and Don. And after I was fired, this one undercover officer and I continued to work as hard as we could to get information to Govar, because we still had a lot of contacts, and our informants were building at that point. Dan Harmon took office on January 1 of 1991. His very first official act was to issue a subpoena to me to bring him all the evidence my task force had gathered against him and all the other public officials. Now, the media didn't see anything wrong with this. I refused to answer the subpoena, and the media came down on me and said if there was anything to the information I had, I should turn it over to proper authorities. Never mind that the proper authorities were the people that we had investigated. So I was slammed again in the media. The next thing that happened was Judge Cole, John Cole, who was the circuit judge we had also gathered information on, issued two felony warrants for my arrest, one in the county where I lived and one in another county out of the district. Now, the media didn't see anything wrong with this either. Failure to answer a subpoena is an unclassified misdemeanor. It's like getting a speeding ticket. You should be issued a citation and sent on your way. Yet, felony warrants were issued for my arrest, and when Judge Cole was interviewed, he told the media that when I was arrested, I would not be allowed to bond out. So can you imagine absolutely nothing on your record until you get a speeding ticket, you're arrested, thrown in jail, and not allowed to bond out? The media didn't see a problem with that. I was slammed some more, and I was labeled, former prosecutor, now felony fugitive, is what they called me. Well, my parents got a telephone call from a dispatcher in Hot Spring County that said, Ms. Kazee, with my mom's name, said, I heard two deputies, sheriffs talking, and when your daughter's arrested, she is not going to be allowed to leave the jail alive. Well, of course, this scared everyone, so I left the state. I moved to Texas thinking that it was only going to be for a week, a few weeks at the most, because Bob Govar was still promising indictments. Well, the weeks turned into months, and just before June of 1991, when I was still in hiding, a reporter for one of the state papers called me. I was in contact with some of the reporters at that point, told me that the U.S. Attorney Chuck Banks, now understand this was, and he was Reagan appointed, by the way, a Republican appointed U.S. Attorney was going to shut down this grand jury investigation, which was ready to indict a bunch of local Democrats. And in exchange, he was going to get a federal judgeship nomination from Bush, of course. Is this just too ridiculous to believe? I mean, it made no sense at the time. And I thought, this can't be true. This cannot be true. And in fact, I wouldn't even repeat it because I thought it was too stupid to say. But you know what? That's what happened. In June of 1991, Chuck Banks held a press conference, closed down the grand jury investigation, gave the excuse that all of this 18 months of investigation was based on rumor, innuendo, and that I was basically crazy. And he got a federal judgeship nomination. And I didn't get it. At this point, my husband and I talked, and we said, you know, I've done everything I can do. I don't know what else there is to do. So he sold his business. I was professionally destroyed. I was personally discredited. I really had no future in Arkansas. And he had a brother in Texas, so we moved to the Houston area. He sold his business, and we sold our home and moved to moved to Texas, which we established, you know, a new life there, and it turned out to be the best life possible, so everything turned out fine for us. While I was there, after we moved, Linda started trying to get a hold of me, and she called one of my brothers, who were very protective of me, because we were thinking, well, yeah, you're still in Dan Harmon's pocket, and you know, Dan Harmon is just looking for me, so they wouldn't give her any information. Then in March of 1994, this was 2 years later, 3 years later, gosh, 3 years. 3 years later, in March of 1994, one of my brothers got a call from the FBI agent, Phyllis Cornan, that said, you know, I would like to talk to Gene. We've opened a new investigation. And my brother told me, and I said, well, you know, call her back and tell her, no, I'm not interested, that any of the information that they need, they can get from Bob Govar. So when my brother talked to Phyllis again, she said, well, will you at least tell Gene that the FBI has recommended that Chuck Banks be charged with obstruction of justice for shutting down that 1990 federal grand jury investigation. Well, when she told me that, I thought, you know, they're serious this time. They're really going to do something. Long story short, this is the time period that I met Linda. She and I worked very closely with Phyllis Cornan for 18 months, many, 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 many hours of conversations back and forth, exchanging information. That's when the MENA connection was made. That's when it all came together. And when it all came together, I said, Phyllis, this is too big. This investigation is going to be shut down. You know, then I knew. This is why Chuck Banks, Republican-appointed Chuck Banks, protected local Democrats and got a federal judgeship nomination out of the deal. This is when it all made sense, why the local investigation, the state police would go nowhere, the federal grand jury was shut down, the FBI is now going to be shut down. Phyllis said, that's not possible. I've got these three other agents in different states who believe this is a good case, and that is just not going to happen. She said, who has the power to shut down the FBI? Bill Clinton was president at the time. And of course, that's exactly what happened. It got shut down cold. It was not just an insult. It was insult on insult, because at the meeting that Linda had that she told you about, they said, there's not even evidence that a crime was committed, much less evidence of who might have done this elusive crime. Well, like Linda told you, she had cried for days. I am now a school teacher, and the minute I walked in from teaching that day that Linda had this meeting with the FBI, she was on the phone and sobbing and told me about it, and we both just couldn't breathe for a long time. And after a few days, we discussed it and said, well, this time we are going public. I had never been public. I had never told my story public. I don't like the idea of even being a public person. I'm very private. In fact, I'm almost antisocial. But this had to be done. And we got the video, made the video, started doing talk radio, and now we'll talk to anyone who will listen. And as a result, another long story short, we believe that we are responsible for the resignation of the Little Rock, head of the Little Rock FBI, because of some heat that we brought on to him. My brother, Mark, who's in the audience here, established a website for us. It's a wonderful, it's a massive website. It's ID Files, IDFILES, IDFiles.com. Microsoft has named us one of the best of the web for 3 years running. Great information on that. The other thing that at this point, the team was Mark and Linda and me. And at this point, we said, well, you know, after the video came out, we were getting calls from people who wanted to write books. Well, we were very, very, very protective of our integrity and our credibility at that point. We absolutely refused to have anything said that we could not prove. And we said, well, if there's interest in a book, we've got to find someone to write it that we can trust. And we thought about it, and we talked again, and individually we came up with one name, and that was Mara Leverett. It was just like, this is the obvious. Mara Leverett has got to be the one that writes this book. So we approached Mara, and she had to think about it. We held our breaths while she thought about it, and she consented, and we were absolutely thrilled. No one could have written this book but Mara Leverett, and I am now going to turn the podium to her.